And welcome to Ladies Who London podcast. I'm Emily Dell.
And I'm Alex Lacey, and we're qualified London Blue Badge tourist guides.
Each week we bring to you some of the best bits of London.
We talk about our favourite people, places and events with a bit of information, a lot of laughs and a whole lot of fun.
We can be found on Instagram at Ladies Who London podcast and on our website, guidemily.com.
And alexlacey.com, as well as ladieswholondon.com for more information about the podcast and what we're up to. A day late. Hello, Em.
Day late. Everybody, gosh, so sorry.
Yeah, really, really sorry.
Huge apologies.
I cannot tell you how busy it is in London right now. I mean, we are just snowed under. I'm just working every single hour. I don't have time to respond to all the emails I'm getting. It's mad. We're recording this currently at 10:30 on Wednesday night. And yeah, this is how we're squishing the podcast into the first really busy season since we've done the podcast. So how are you coping, Em?
Not too bad. Although I did cut my own hair earlier.
Oh no, and we've got to that stage, have we?
Yeah, well, just time's so precious at the moment. I really don't have the time to go and sit in a salon. So I was like, do you know what, sod it. I'm just going to do the whole head over the bath scenario, chop away and hope for the best.
This is what I'm thinking, is that there's loads of things I think, oh, I really should do that. It'd be really nice to. But then I go, yeah, but then you've got to travel there and travel back. And that takes time. And that's now then 3 hours rather than one. And
it's just exactly. Okay. It just goes on forever in the salon, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But my God, I wish I went to a salon, or actually I really need to now, because it's just so dodgy. I'm like looking at the front of my hair now and it's just so uneven.
Wow, that is wonky.
All right, calm down. I know, it's really, really bad.
We're running on steam a little bit, aren't we? The last week I've had, I don't know if I've ever mentioned this on the podcast, just because it wasn't happening when we were in lockdown, but I run my own company. Doing food tours and corporate events and eco-friendly events and things like that. And it has just in the last few weeks gone super stellar. And last week I had 6 events in 6 days. So I was just sleeping and running events and that was it. So apologies to everybody who I owe an email to. It will happen. It's just gone bonkers, isn't it?
I'm sure other places around the world are just the same, where there's just this influx of movement and people that are wanting to travel again.
Yeah.
Which
it's
is
also last minute as well.
Very last minute. Yeah.
Anyway, moving on.
I have to say, last week, getting so many comments about how they absolutely loved the Enon Chapel scandal.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Just really, really interesting. Proper gory.
Proper gory, huh?
Yeah. I personally really loved it.
Thanks. It was a story that when I found out about it a while ago, I just was like, oh, this is gold dust. Yeah. It's crazy. I went to see Operation Mincemeat again last night.
You did?
Yes, and that's why we couldn't record
one
last
of the reasons
night.
Why we couldn't record last night.
Although I was sitting there and it was amazing, but I was so tired I nearly fell asleep. It was incredible.
No. So, yeah. Oh, was it as good as the first time?
Yes,
though?
It was, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I wish I came as well.
It's on until July, so if anybody wants to go, it'll be on. And I suspect it might have a run elsewhere as well.
Definitely.
But so anyway, in completely random order, talking about things as they occur to me. So from last week's Enon Chapel scandal, we have to figure out our podcast pedestal. What were the options, Em?
So your option, if I remember rightly, was Dancing on the Dead.
Yes.
So you basically had all of these funerals, all these burials underneath the chapel, and then the chaplain took the coffins and burnt them. So you just had lots of dead people under the floor, basically. And then suddenly there was this like, oh, actually, this is a pretty cool thing. And this is actually going to get people to come to our gig.
Yeah.
And we'll make it a thing to dance on the dead. So that was your thing.
Bonkers. And what was your thing? I'm going to make you remember them both because my brain's not working today.
Goodness me. So mine was the fact that, you know, you had this chaplain or member of the church that did all these terrible things, but he had his comeuppance because his body was found underneath his own chapel and his head was shriveled. And I just love the image of his little shriveled head.
Yeah. Well, we don't know exactly where his body was found, but yeah, the shriveled head, which then greeted people at the end of their tour a little bit later.
Yes.
George Walker was exhuming everybody and making yet another spectacle out of the whole thing. So, again, it's quite a close one this week. It's 55 to 45%.
Right.
And it's gone a different way than I thought it was going to go. It's
Oh.
gone shriveled head. I thought I was going to
Has it?
walk it.
Oh
Maybe switching the days around to the Wednesday didn't play in my favor quite so much.
Oh my goodness me.
Yeah, went for shriveled head. So there you go. You're a win.
I won last week as well, didn't I?
I genuinely can't remember what I did 3 hours ago. So yeah, let's go with yes.
I remember being really shocked last week as well. Wow, I totally had thought that people would go for Dancing on the Dead, but wow, brilliant. Thanks so much, everyone.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone. Brilliant. Yeah.
Great, cool.
So what's the overall scores on the doors, George Doors?
So I think it's currently 10-8 to me.
Okay. Not unsurmountable.
No, but still,
All right.
congratulations, Em.
Shut up, you've got a wonky fringe. Right. I'm on the
Wonky
fringe.
I know.
So this week it's your week to discuss. Now you've gone food stuff, you've gone biscuits in Birmingham.
Food obsessed at the moment, bloody hell. So a couple of weeks ago I talked about Tudor etiquette and we spoke about food. And yes, this week we are in Bermondsey again. We have been in Bermondsey before for a couple of things. One thing actually was quite smelly, but not smelly in the good sense like I'm going to be talking about today. Smelly in the manure sense, because we were talking about the tanning industry,
Yeah,
wasn't we?
the leather and
Yeah.
all that.
And Bermondsey is quite a sensory experience, really, when it comes to looking into the history of Bermondsey, because you've had so many different factories and so many things that's happened there to cause a bit of a smell. So you had the tanneries, you had the Neckinger River that was absolutely foul. You had the jam factory, the pickle factory, and you had the biscuit factory, which is what I'm going to be focusing on today. Do you know much about the biscuit factory?
Almost nothing, actually. I've been past it a few times because you and I don't live too far away. But no, I know there's quite a lot of factories around there that have since been turned into accommodation. Like there was the one that used to do the seal skins, which was, I think, it's now called the Canada one, I think. But there's a few, isn't there? So I assume it's now apartments. But I other than that, I don't really know anything.
Okay,
So
well,
over
let
to
me tell
you.
you a story, and it's about biscuits. So it kind of starts in the 19th century with a chap called James Peake, who was born in Devon, and he was one of three brothers, and they decided to basically create this tea importation company, which was huge. It was in the East End of London. It was called Peake Brothers, and they were by the 19, sorry, by the 1840s even, importing about £5 million worth of tea per
Whoa.
year. Yeah. So, we've got some wealthy brothers on our hands, basically. James Peake marries a woman called Elizabeth Masters, and they obviously have a good
Really, really
time.
hoping you were going to say her name was Elizabeth Biscuits.
Yeah, can you imagine? Elizabeth Crunchy. And they have eight children.
Whoa.
And yeah, this is the 19th century,
Yeah, to
remember.
be fair.
And two of the sons suddenly said, "Look, Dad, we don't want to be part of your business." And he was like, "Look, that's not good enough. But I understand that you might want to go in your own direction, but please do something that is kind of linked to what we do." So he convinced them basically to open up a biscuit factory.
I mean, this is
And
ingenious, isn't it? Going, we can help each other out here, you know. Everyone loves a good dunking biscuit. So,
well, you say that, but
are
this is
these
the
not
time.
dunkers?
At the time, you wouldn't go, "Oh, I really feel like a biscuit." Like, now you'd be like, "Oh, it'd be lovely to have a cup of tea and a biscuit." If someone offered you a biscuit, it's quite hard to say no. This is the time when biscuits were a necessity if you were out on a long journey. So,
Right.
say for instance, if you're a sailor out at sea in the hold, if that's the right term of phrase for a boat, you would have had a huge amount of biscuits, because of course they're going to stay as fresh as can be. Well, I say as fresh as can be, they're hard as a rock, but they're still edible, aren't they?
Yeah,
And you
they're
can
not
pack them with
sweet biscuits
sugar.
though, are they? They're Oh, well, some might have been, but the ships
Yeah.
were quite, dry and mealy and blah.
Yeah, but they soon realized that you needed sugar in there to keep up their energy.
Oh, okay.
So as we kind of push towards the late 1800s, they definitely get a little bit sweeter.
Okay.
So this is where we are with kind of biscuits at the time. But it's a little bit sad actually, because these two brothers who say, okay, we'll create this biscuit emporium, Dad. One of them dies really young at the age of about 20, I think it was, and one of them emigrates to North America.
Right.
So Dad kind of takes it on himself anyway. And the company is known as Peake and Freen. Peake because of James Peake, and Freen comes from George Hender Freen, who married one of James's daughters. And he was quite influential for the business because he was a miller and he worked with creating biscuits for ships. So he was quite important to the business. And they had their first building in Bermondsey. The main one that still partly exists today was their second building. So their first one was quite small in comparison to their second, and it was located on Mill Street, which is very close to, if anyone's familiar with Bermondsey, so the Co-op, which is near St. Saviour's Dock. It's kind of there. It's very close to the Thames, which would be brilliant because, of course, if they needed the flour and sugar and all sorts of different things for making biscuits, they could easily, have it up the coming up the river and then easily bring it into their warehouse.
They couldn't just go to the co-op.
Unfortunately not. Unfortunately not. We also start seeing the name Carr, John Carr, starting to jump into the business in the middle of the 19th century. And he was an apprentice son of the Carlisle-based Scottish milling factory, which was quite big. And it's him who actually starts to create shortbread in the factory.
Oh.
And I'll come to different things that they created shortly. And they're getting pretty big. I mean, by the 1860s, they're starting to export biscuits to Australia. And they're getting so big that actually they need to start looking for new premises. But before they do, they have to complete a huge order, which is from the French army for 470 tons of biscuits.
Whoa.
Yeah, for the ration packs, which supplied to soldiers fighting the Franco-Prussian War.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so which tells us that obviously their company was very well known. And when it came to London, this was the main biscuit factory. If you wanted biscuits, these are the guys that were going to do it for you. Have you heard of Sweet Pearl biscuits? Okay, so they, how can I describe it to you? It's kind of like it's a little circle. It almost looks a little bit like shortbread, but
Okay.
they're very, very delicate. I think if you dunked it in a cup of tea, it wouldn't take long before it crumbled.
Oh dear, not a dunker.
No,
No,
not a
not like
dunker. And they created, they say, 11 million or around 11 million sweet pearl biscuits in celebration of the end of this particular siege.
that. What?
Yeah,
That they were
yeah,
sending out to the French army? Or
yeah,
just, oh
yeah,
my goodness.
yeah. It's just mad, isn't it? Now, whilst they were looking for the second building because they needed bigger premises, sadly, the first building burnt down. So they were like, right, well, we definitely need to move now. So there was this huge fire which roared through the building in the 1870s. And it was so big that Queen Victoria's son, the Prince of Wales, who later becomes King Edward VII, he actually asked to be taken down to Bermondsey in a carriage so that he can be, a spectator to watch
Whoa.
this fire take place. It was obviously news traveled down to Westminster pretty quickly.
Oh my goodness, that's hilarious. Yeah, let's just go on a destruction tourism thing. I mean, I suppose people do
Yeah.
that now, don't they? I guess, but.
Yeah, true, true. Now Carr, who I mentioned earlier, he had quite a lot of land and he actually just purchased about 10 acres in Bermondsey within the area of Clements Road and Drummonds Road, which is where the second building, aka the biscuit factory, is located. And actually, if you see little maps of Bermondsey, if you're waiting for a bus in the area, if you're outside the tube, you can get those kind of black and white maps with a circle telling you you are here. In yellow, you'll see certain kind of points of interest, and in yellow on the maps, you'll see it will say Biscuit Factory. And it gives you a kind of idea of how big or how much of the building they still have left. But I'll come back to kind of modern times for the Biscuit Factory at the end. Now, when they purchased their new building, it was next to a manure company and a tripe boiling works. And they were like, this just
Gonna go
isn't going to
well.
work. This is going to be
Odd flavors
terrible.
for biscuits.
And as I say, when it comes to Bermondsey, it's quite a sensory experience, especially if you lived there in the 19th century. And actually, if you did live in the 19th century in the area, you would have been, you would have found it incredibly hard. It very, very poor. And we've touched upon on a previous episode when we talked about the sorters, how Bermondsey was just a slum, really. So it wasn't a very nice place to live because you had all these smells. But more people started to come in when the biscuit making factory started to take over more land because it started to smell so lovely on the streets. You have that kind of that warm baking smell, that kind of homely, cozy feeling that you get maybe for me personally, mostly around Christmas time. It's the only time I ever bake. I don't think I've done that for about 5 years. But anyway, this is where it was actually known and became known in the papers. People called it Biscuit Town, which, just suddenly changes the whole idea of
That's
Bermondsey.
a very different image, isn't it? Biscuit Town sounds like something out of a, I don't know, yeah, like almost like a Christmas movie, or a lovely kind of kids book or something.
You can imagine the gates to Bermondsey with like this massive gingerbread man figure being like, "Welcome to Bermondsey."
Feel like you're extrapolating slightly here, but yeah.
No. This is the time actually when James Peake, the original founder, he decides to step down at this point. So you've still got the Freens and you've still got the Carrs involved. And at this point, you've got about 4,000 people that are employed in the factory. Apparently, everybody knew somebody that worked there. And if you did work there, you were treated very well. There was a doctor on site. So if you personally needed to see somebody and you were finding it hard to go and see your GP, then because you worked in the factory, you could go and see a doctor. This was the same as a dentist. They had their own amateur dramatic society, which I just think is fantastic. Definitely someone playing the gingerbread character, like, hello.
You're really wedded to this gingerbread
I
character, aren't
really
you?
am. They also had their own kind of sports teams. And like every year, I imagined that they would have probably gone over to Southwark Park and, kind of split up into teams and just had a really good time.
I like this idea though about these factories providing work, but also starting to provide a social element to it as well. I mean, we talked a while ago about the Match Girls, and that was a very much not that case. It was a case where they were paying literally to work in some occasions. So I love this change of going, man, we need to make life nicer for people and actually looking after their workers. It's really quite, well, it's quite forward thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. Around the side of the factory, you would have found after school hours just queues and queues of children. And that's because they had a little shop. If you went into the shop, I don't know how much it would have been, but you were handed a crunchy white bag. And in this bag were broken biscuits.
Oh, you gotta love the
So
broken
you
biscuits.
gotta love the broken biscuits. So, of course, if it's broken, then they can't sell them on. But they kind of can because they've got their own shop and they just put some random biscuit selections in a crunchy little white bag and off you go. You pay a couple of pennies
Did you
and
ever used
off
to
you
get
toddle.
boxes of broken biscuits when you were a kid? I remember my grandma buying them. Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know if they do that
absolutely.
anymore.
No, I don't think they
No.
do. Why?
They were so
Why
good.
not?
It's like chip scraps, the end of the kind of crunchy bits at the end of the chip fry. It's all
And it
that's left
also,
in the
you don't
mix.
know how many biscuits you're eating, so there's not as much guilt as,
Yeah.
just like jamming the whole kind of the whole biscuit in.
Two half jammy dodgers is not one jammy dodger. I mean, let's face it.
No,
Nowhere
it's
near.
really not. No, it's definitely not. Now the factory was so big that they even had their own fire station.
Oh, well, having after the first go, once bitten, twice shy.
True. And they would need to. I mean, this is the time as well when people are doing a lot of things by hand. I mean, yes, they've got huge machineries. For instance, they've got like a, they would have had a huge machine that would have been rolling out the dough, but you still needed somebody there to kind of make sure that it was going in the right direction and to make sure that it needed to be kind of cut just in case bits were going to fall off the sides. And it was a huge operation and very dangerous for some people that worked there in terms of, you know, what they were doing and how close to the machinery they were getting. It was the first factory in London to be supplied by electricity.
Really?
They also had, and I love this, a staff magazine.
Brilliant.
Yeah, but they must have been quite forward-thinking in equality because apparently one of their columns was entitled Feminine Matters. And this
Oh.
is in 1908.
Blimey, that's pretty well, I mean, you've got the height of the suffragette movement then, haven't you, really?
Yeah,
So you're going to be
true,
in the forefront of
true.
people's minds. And
Yeah.
what, just please tell me that this newspaper has a really punny title.
I think it's called The Biscuit Box.
That'll do. That's okay.
Yeah, you
I'll take that. Could be
into
worse.
that? Could be worse, could be worse. Now, at this point, and we're kind of, you know, as I say, early 1900s, you've now got the Frean family that have come away, but you've got the Carrs that have remained. And Arthur Carr starts to get involved, and he eventually becomes chairman of the factory. And his name can be found on a slide within the grounds of St. James's Church.
A slide.
Yeah, so if you go to St. James's Church, which is just around the corner from Bermondsey Station, you will find a slide and it's called the Joy Slide. And this was created by the great great grandson of Arthur Carr. And it is a remake, albeit it looks completely different from the original, but it's a remake that Arthur Carr produced in 1921. And when he produced this slide in 1921 for Bermondsey, it was kind of like the first kind of slide of this kind that you would have seen in London anyway. In the papers, they referred to it as an American slide because it was so kind of strange to
Are you talking
see.
like about a slide for kids to go down?
Yeah,
Oh, you are.
like a
Okay.
playground slide. And
Wow.
he wanted this because he noticed that lots of children would queue up next to the entrance to the church where you had these kind of stairwells, should I say. Well, I don't know how to describe this really, but these kind of slopes along the stairs, and children would just slide along it, you know, for fun.
Oh.
So he put a lot of money forward along with Ada Sorter. You can actually find a picture on the slide. It's called the Joy Slide, of Arthur and Ada together. And we spoke about her on a recent pod, haven't we?
Well, not recently, but yeah, quite a while ago now.
Yeah, when I
But
say recent, I
yeah, we
mean,
definitely
yeah.
talked to
God, how
I
long
love
have you
Ada
been
Salter.
going? A
She's
year and a half.
such a legend.
Yeah, definitely. Now, in 1906, there was a documentary, and the reason, you know, that I'm talking about these people working next to the machines and shaping all the dough is because I've watched this documentary, which was by Crix and Sharp, and you can find it quite easy on YouTube, and it shows you people working in the factory, and it's just mesmerizing to see people working with all the pastry and the dough and cutting. And I don't know if you ever kind of like are up late at night and you watch those videos on Instagram where you see people like pushing bits of cake and like weird things. It's quite
It's
like that.
mesmeric, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. It's wonderful. Now let's get to the biscuits. Now, a lot of biscuits that the this factory were creating had these holes in. They were known as the docker holes. And the holes were produced in the biscuits kind of as a brand, but also as a necessity because it lets the air rise and escape, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't turn into bread essentially. So if I tell you about the biscuits with the holes in, can you think of any biscuits that you enjoy today or have enjoyed previously that might have been
Biscuits with
produced?
holes in. Well, I mean Jammy Dodger, but that's holes filled with jam. What other ones with holes in? I can't think.
So you've got shortbread. So if you
Yeah.
think of the shortbread, they've got the little holes in.
Oh, I see.
Gary
Yeah.
Galibaldi.
Yeah, nice guy, yeah.
Yeah. You had digestive biscuits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't mean like holes punched all the way through, but you mean like little dimples?
No, the little dimples.
Oh, okay.
The little dimples. Sorry, I probably didn't describe that well. Yeah, the little dimples. And one, which is actually my favorite, the Bourbon biscuit.
Oh, I love a bourbon.
I love a Bourbon biscuit and a custard cream, of course. Oh my God. Would you eat a Bourbon and a custard cream just like, all in one? Or would you take the top off and then eat the middle bit separately?
Yeah, take the top off, eat the
Yes.
middle
Yes. Me
bit.
too. Me
If we've got
too.
anyone listening who is not from the UK and doesn't know what these biscuits are, you're going to think we are mad. I mean, there's an accuracy to that, but you're going to have to go and Google all these biscuits because it's like a religion over here, isn't it?
Yeah, because biscuits means different things in different places as well, doesn't
Yes,
it?
that's,
So,
yeah. In America, they are
yeah,
more like,
cookies.
well, yeah, biscuits are cookies, but they do use the word biscuits, but I think they're more sort of like scones or something
Yeah,
that are savoury.
yeah,
Anyway, we know
yeah.
what biscuits are, really.
Yeah, we do. Now, the Bourbon biscuit was actually known as the Crayola initially. The Bourbon name comes in the 1930s. Well, actually, originally it was called, well, it was Crayola, and then it was the Bourbon creams,
So they were
and then it was
created by Pete
Bourbon.
Freen, were they? The Bourbon
Yes.
biscuit.
Yeah. Well,
Really?
created by Piet Fried, but they were actually kind of designed by a German inventor, if you like, called Dr. Hans Zenlok.
Great name.
Yeah, he worked for Cadbury's and created them there. And then eventually they started being created or produced in this particular biscuit factory. And there's been a bit of speculation about the name Bourbon. Some people think that it comes from Bourneville, connected to where the professor created the biscuit. His hometown was Bonn, so maybe Bourbon. Yeah, some people thinking that it's Bourbon, which means the
It's
best
not.
butter,
Oh, I see.
because they would have used the top of the milk, butter from the top of the milk, which apparently is the best butter. Well, I
Okay.
guess it would be because it's like, cream, isn't it? So yeah, and did you know that a penguin is a Bourbon biscuit but with different chocolate on the outside?
Get no, really?
Yeah.
Seriously? All your
Seriously.
biscuit facts here, gang.
Yeah.
Everything you wanted to know. And so, right, tell me that a penguin was invented by Piet Freen. Surely
No,
not. No,
no,
okay.
no, 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 no,
So just the
no.
bourbon.
Just the Bourbon biscuit. But yeah, that I can't believe that. But it's, as I say, it's a different chocolate. It's a McVitie's chocolate coated penguin.
Okay.
But yeah, there we go. And apparently, the Bourbon was the first ever biscuit to be consumed on the moon, on
On the
the moon.
moon?
I
I feel
can't
like there's some scientific impossibilities
talk.
about
On the moon. Yeah, by a man called Edwin Aldrin. I'm telling you. I mean, obviously, he was in a spaceship. He wasn't just like, hang on a minute, lads. I'm just gonna
You
just
mean in space, the first biscuit in space, or
no, on
when
the
they were on the
moon,
surface of the moon?
on the surface of the moon.
Just not taking his helmet off.
I feel like you might die. Yeah, but
Yeah, but it's really
in a few
worth
years, ladies who London are going to talk about this. So. Oh dear.
Yeah.
Now they didn't just make sweet stuff, they also made Twiglets.
Oh.
Yes, who doesn't love a Twiglet? Well, actually, I guess it's kind of they're a bit marmitey, aren't they? So you either love them or hate
Literally,
them.
they are.
They are
They are Marmite.
literally marmitey. And they used to sell them kind of as a like a Christmas treat. They used to be quite a high class cocktail accompaniment. So if you're having a cocktail, then you might have this kind of drum of
Because they're
Twiglets,
still a big
which
thing. I only ever really eat them at Christmas as well.
yeah.
So again, were they invented by Piet Freen?
Yes.
Wow. So I guess over time, different companies have then bought the different, like, brands or whatever, because Twiglets are obviously not made by any company called Piet Freen anymore, are they?
No. No, and actually, they established quite a few different factories and different buildings around the world. So, they also created a factory in Dum Dum in India, which is
Okay.
still producing biscuits there today.
Right.
They also created a factory in Australia, and they actually sent out people that worked in the Bermondsey factory to Australia to train the staff in Sydney. This is what we do, this is how we want you to do it. Canada, they established their first bakery in Canada in the 1940s.
Okay.
And actually, if you go to where it was established, you can find roads, which you've got a Bermondsey Road there. You've got a Peak Freens Road there as well.
Really?
Yeah, which is quite nice.
That's so funny.
But it all has to end, doesn't it? It has to end at some point. So the factory itself in Bermondsey closes after 126 years and produces its very last biscuit, which I believe was a custard cream, on the 29th of May, 1989.
Okay. So this is where obviously they then sell all these biscuits on because if they're going to close, then eek.
Yeah, and of course, you can still get these biscuits today. So it's not like, oh God, we're never going to have a custard
Oh
cream again. They're still very much there, but this particular factory in Bermondsey had to close. And they actually sold off each acre for £1 million.
really?
Yeah,
In
in the
Bermondsey, of all
1980s
places?
in Bermondsey.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Very.
Now, today, I have actually been in part of it because part of the biscuit factory is the arch, which is a climbing wall centre.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's part of it. But there are huge plans which are going to be changing the face of the area. And these plans are being delivered by Grosvenor Britain and Ireland, who, take over so much land. But there's a few questions about how it's going to be changed because a lot of people still want that element of history and that element of remembering the biscuit factory, especially as I
Yeah.
said, there were so many people that worked there, and you would still have a lot of people that live in Bermondsey today that remembers their relative, like their parents or grandparents that used to work there.
Yeah.
But it is being changed. However, you can go into part of the old biscuit factory this coming September during
Cool.
open house, which is
Oh,
very
wow.
exciting. So they're opening it up on a couple of days, one of which is Friday, the 10th of September, and I believe it's going to be Saturday as well. You do need to book quite soon if you do want to do it because the capacity that they can only take is 20 people, and this is from 10 until 2. So it's quite long. Well, actually, you don't have to be there the whole entire time, obviously. But yeah, it's pretty cool. They've actually made a few discoveries as well. They discovered quite recently that there's this arch tunnel, this kind of brick arch tunnel underneath the factory floor. So with that, they kind of have to kind of block that area off and kind of find out what on earth that is and if it's stable, etc.
Wow.
But yes, and one little discovery that was made in 2011, discovered at the back of a kitchen cupboard in Dorset, was a little tin, and it was a tinned Christmas pudding.
Oh.
Yeah, by Peak and Freen. And it was actually a Peak and Freen teetotal plum pudding for Christmas.
Oh, so no booze.
No booze, and they know why. They produced 1,000 of these, so it's quite incredible that this one still exists and is still, contained. I'd be so tempted to open it up and just have a smell. But they made 1,000 of these from about the early 1900s, and the idea came from a man who was superintendent of the Royal Naval Temperance Society. He was a man called Agnes Weston, and because he was part of the Temperance Society, that's why the
You
recipe
wouldn't
is
think
alcohol
temperance and the
free.
navy go together very well, would you?
No, they're probably quite upset when they receive that in the post or out at sea. So yes, but one little exciting thing is that I have found quite recently that there is a museum, and I was telling you about this a couple of days ago. And so there's a museum which is ran in the area by two men that used to work in the factory, and on display are just so many wonderful things. So you can find, for instance, a replica of the wedding cake that was gifted by Peak Freeds to the then Princess Elizabeth when she married Prince Philip in 1947.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful cake, and it's got all sorts of kind of little features on it, like little battleships and lots of naval links for her husband, and just lots of different kind of beautiful flowers. And so that's really cool. So you can see kind of a double of that. You can find lots of beautiful tins. And if you purchased a Pecan Freen tin on the adverts, on the posters, they would give you ideas of what you could do with your tin after use. So you could use it as, something for storing pencils, or you could keep makeup in it. And there is one where you have four tins and they slot together like a piece of Lego and they turn into what looks like a robot.
Oh,
So,
wow.
yeah. Quite a simplistic robot, but still this kind of metal robot, and it would give people that impetus to buy more than one
Oh,
tin so that for
brilliant.
Christmas their children can put all four together and have a toy at the same time.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so they've just got lots of incredible stuff. They've also got what seems to be this kind of Harry Potter spells book where you can find all of the recipes for all of the biscuits that they made, and also biscuits that they came up with that they thought actually nobody is going to like. So really kind of disgusting flavors and things. But yeah, and if you are interested in learning more, there is actually a book that I have found. I haven't purchased it already myself, but it's called Bourbon Creams and Tattered Dreams. Yeah,
Oh.
it's by somebody whose father worked in the factory, and it came out in 2017.
Gosh, that's a great title. I kind of want that to be my obituary.
Yeah, Bourbon Creams and Tattered Dreams.
Amazing.
So there we go.
So how can we visit the museum? What's the situation there?
So you need to get in touch with them. So I will put information into the show notes. And I did say to you that we could do a little group outing.
We could potentially.
Yeah, so if anybody out there is listening to this and thinks, actually, I live in London or visit in London. Actually,
I'm
if you're
a
visiting
biscuit
London, you're
fan.
here for a few days. Would you want to?
Who
But if
knows?
this is, up your alley, then
We could
please let us
possibly.
know, and then I can, yeah, see what the capacity is and how many people we can fit in, because I don't think it's huge. But yeah, it could be quite fun.
Could be fun.
Share a
Yeah.
biscuit.
We've still to put anything together for some outings, and it's very, just simply because we've run out of time a little bit. We'll get round to something. This season's taking us a bit by surprise, hasn't it? So
Yeah, we will. I think definitely
I think we
kind
thought we
of,
had more time than we did.
yeah, at the end of the summer, you'll see a lot more things coming your way in the way of outings and different things.
Yeah, we're just trying to keep our heads above water at the moment. Well,
Yeah.
Fab, thank you so much, Em. That was a great chat. I didn't, yeah, I mean, I've seen the Peak Freen name around, and I had no idea that that's where bourbon and other Twiglets and things all originated. And I had some Twiglets in my house for Christmas last year, less than a mile from where they were created. So that makes me quite happy.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, lovely.
How
Yeah, I'm
fantastic.
really upset that I haven't got any biscuits with me. I mean, nobody wants to listen to a podcast and hear someone
No,
go,
probably not.
but still, it'd be nice to have a cup of tea now with a bourbon. Oh,
Yeah.
man.
Well, it's time for bed, so probably not, but anyway.
Yeah, true.
Podcast pedestal.
So we have to go on and look at our podcast pedestal toppers for today. What are you going to go for?
So I think I'm going to have to go for this whole four tins making up a robot. I'm going to have to try
That's
and find a
cute.
picture. Because I just think it's so versatile and it's such a good way of attracting mum and dad and also the child. So yeah, I'm going to go for the changeable tins.
Okay, that's a nice one. I like that one. I'm going to go for, I know exactly what I'm going to go for this week. I'm going to go for the joy slide because I really like
Oh,
that
are
as an
you? Oh,
idea. Yeah, I
lovely.
like that they were putting things in place for the local community as well as just having a factory and using people's sort of energy and brain power to make stuff and that'd be it. I really like that they did that. And I like that it's still there today,
It is. I
albeit in a
took
slightly
Carmen there
different
today.
form. Oh, did you really?
I
Ah.
did, yeah.
Yeah, slightly different form, but nonetheless, it is, it's still there and it is still making the kids of the neighborhood happy. So I like that. I think that's a really lovely legacy. And the fact that the photo, you said the photo of, well, we're back to our old friend Ada Salter, and the photo of the other guy, or the name at least, is on there. I mean, I think that's, that just shows you, doesn't it? You can make stuff and create things, but it's what you do to make everyone's lives a bit nicer. So I'm going to go for the joy slide.
Nice. Yeah, lovely. Yeah, yeah. And you can, as I say, yeah, see these really lovely pictures of what it used to look like. And yeah, it's very nice. It's quite weird. It's got the kind of mock Tudor style, the old one.
Yeah, I was just looking up pictures of it as you were talking.
Yeah, you can also find pictures on it of the children going down the little kind of stone banister.
Yeah, nice. Well, there we go. That's it for this week for your podcast pedestals. So, have you got any parish notices before we head on?
I don't think I do. No, I don't think I do.
Either. No. Other than to say, if anyone's expecting an email from me, please just hang in there or give me a nudge, because I am just emailing all the time at the moment. So apologies if you are expecting one, but I haven't forgotten about you. I'm just trudging my way through everything.
The Wheel of Destiny.
So, wheel spin time, and I was having a little think because we've done quite a few places or events lately, so I'm feeling the draw to a person. So yeah, let's go for it.
Right, off we go. Oh, it's landed in a place not too far from an area that we've mentioned before, but it's never landed here. It's Belgravia.
Oh, Belgravia. Mm. Oh, that's fun. There, oh goodness me, there is a ton of stuff. I'm just trying to think about people who are linked. Oh, actually, I know exactly who. She's right at the top of my mind. Oh, do you know what? This is quite an interesting little link. So I did a tour last weekend with the lovely Rosie Bergonzi. Hi, Rosie, who listens to the podcast.
Hi, Rosie.
And it was her birthday, and she brought a bunch of really fun mates, and we did a lovely kind of mashup of Black history and women's history and all sorts of stuff on a roaring hot day. And one of the people I talked about, which is why she's at the top of my head right now, is a lady called Sophia Duleep Singh. And the reason this comes around rather nicely, now I have talked about her on Global Tea Break, the Instagram thing I did, but I know that a lot of people never saw that, so I'm going to do her again. And she is very closely linked to the Koh-i-Noor story.
Ooh.
That we spoke about a few weeks ago. Hmm. Because Maharaja Duleep Singh, the young boy who was brought over to England and who, in air quotes, gifted the Koh-i-Noor to Queen Victoria, is her father.
Oh, right.
And she goes on to have a very interesting story of her own. So I think I'm going to do Sophia Duleep Singh.
Sounds absolutely fabulous. Can't wait.
That's next week's one. Amazing.
Good stuff.
Well, for our part, we are going to try and record a little bit earlier in the week, which is one of the reasons why we've moved the date of the podcast pedestal voting to earlier in the week. So hopefully we won't be late again. But thank you all for being patient, and we really appreciate you coming and listening. And
yeah, thank you. And I can't believe how late it is. I can't believe we're recording this this late.
I've now got to edit this and get this up before 12:30 in the morning, so that it can go out for Thursday morning. But there we go. So next week, hopefully it'll be back to Wednesday, and we'll see you then. But for now, thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.